Morning of today's daf in Nidah, Yud Gimel. We are starting today the second parak of the Masechta. We start with the Mishnah on the very top of the Amud. And we are speaking about Bedikos once again. It's the topic of the first parak. This parak is going to deal with Bedikos from a more practical standpoint. Practical. I'm not talking about practical Bizman Hazeh, but practical just in terms of how to actually do the Bedika, where, when to do the Bedikos. As we discussed already at the end of last parak, Daf Yud Beis and Daf Yud Aleph, the Bedikos that are done, of internal examinations that are done by a woman as to ascertain as to whether or not she's a Nida, are done for the purposes of Taharos. We want to make sure that when dealing with Truma and Kachim, that she is not going to be Metame either one of them. So as a result of that, she needs to do a Bedika to make sure that she is not a Nida. So with that stated, so that was the first parak. The first parak dealt with the more principal issues of chazaka. Does she have a presumption of being not a nida? Does she lose that presumption? When does she lose that presumption? Tumah me'eis la'eis. Those were the big topics that were discussed in the first parak. Second parak over here now going to be dealing with the more practical aspects of the bedika. And so our Mishnah over here is going to be discussing when she should do a bedika. So when she should be doing a bedika? So the Mishnah basically says all the time. I know that's not a numeric answer, that's not a quantifiable answer, but nevertheless, that's basically what we're going to learn together with the Mishnah. And what we're going to do today is we're going to contrast a man and a woman. A man, on the other hand, should not be doing bedikas. Now, for a man, obviously, the issue is not nida, but nevertheless, there are on occasions times where he's going to need to do some sort of examination for reasons which we're going to discuss. And so our Mishnah and Gemara is going to be discussing today examinations to be done by a man to himself. And today is going to be the daf in which we're going to be discussing a man and stimulating oneself. That is today's daf. We start with the Mishnah, Kol Yana Marba Livdok B'Nashim Meshubachas, for a woman. So when she's Marba Livdok, the more that she examines herself, Meshubachas is praiseworthy. So without giving a numeric answer of how much she checked, the Mishnah just simply says often, and as often as possible, and the more the better. However, when it comes to a man, the man, as far as him checking himself, so the Mishnah says he should not check himself. The Mishnah says it much stronger than that, right? I'm being gentle in the way I'm describing the Mishnah. Literally, what should happen to the man when he does an examination is that his hand should be cut off. That is very strong language, obviously. And when we get to the Gemara, we're going to be discussing to what extent is the Mishnah here to be talking, to be understood literally. We start with the Gemara, Maisha Anashim. What's the difference between men and women? A woman should be doing an examination. A man should not be doing an examination. What's the difference? So, Nashim la b'nos hargashin inhu mishubachas. Anashim de b'nei hargashin inhu tikatzeitz. So the Gemara says the difference is hargasha. As to whether or not what will be the result of a man or a woman doing an internal examination. A personal examination. So when it comes to a woman, so eino margishos. They don't have a hargasha, but when it comes to a man, he does have a hargasha. What does that mean? So if you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi writes on the first Rashi on the Mishnah, on the Gemara, sorry, Shemizdazin Ivarav Kishemizchamim V'roa Keri. So when it comes to a man, so when he touches himself, he stimulates himself, and what's going to lead to is Shechva Zer Levatala, his Zera, his seed is going to go to waste, and so as a result of that, that's the Nisr. We're going to be discussing that Nisr at length today in the Gemara. So for a man, that is the problem. For a woman, on the other hand, so there's no Hagasha, does not stimulate herself, and so therefore, there will be no problem. Sounds like from the Gemara that the issue over here is a physiological issue in terms of the distinction between a man and a woman regarding doing an examination on themselves. Take a look at a really interesting Tosos. Over here, second Tosos on the Amud. Tosos over here is a little bit smaller. It's to test my eyesight and to see whether or not I could still read it. So right now, the answer is yes, I could still read it, but with struggle. So, we'll start off with a really interesting opinion of Rabbeinu Tam. Rabbeinu Tam correlates the following two points. One, we know that a woman is not obligated in the mitzvah peruvu. Now, in of itself, that's always a funny comment because, you know, it'd be hard to be fruitful and multiply without women. Not just hard, it's, right, probably, you know, it's, right, just not possible. Okay, anyway, but still, nevertheless, they don't have the mitzvah of peruvu. The man has a mitzvah. And the woman, obviously, is there for the assist in terms of the mitzvah. So, with that stated, Rabbeinu Tam puts the following two points together. So, women are not chayiv in the mitzvah peruvu, and therefore, they're also not going to be subject to the mitzvah of Ashchat HaZera, or the Isser of Ashchat HaZera. We're going to be discussing in the course of today's daf that there is an Isser in the Torah to waste one seed. And so women are not included in that Isser because they're not included in the mitzvah peruvu. That's the correlation that Rabbi Natam says. As far as the women using contraception, so all women can use contraception. There are three women who are recommended to use contraception the way Rabbi Natam understands it, and this is not the understanding of all Rishonim. The way Rabbi Natam understands it is that three women are obligated to use contraception. As far as all other women are concerned, all other women can use contraception. That is according to Rabbi Natam. So now with that stated, Rabbi Natam says, now with that in mind, how did he understand our Gemara? So really interesting. He writes, and I'm reading on in Tosos, Yeshlam kevin delav nos iser hargasha ninu, afilo havo margishos, leperish Rabbi Natam, I'm sorry, afilo havo margishos. And so the way he understands our Gemara is that when the Gemara says that he's not margishos, it's not a physiological distinction between men and women. It's a halachic distinction between men and women. And that women are simply not, don't have the iser of hargasha. Meaning, for whatever, if an internal examination were to, for what, let's just argue that it creates some sort of hashchata zera, right? It's a wasting of a seed. So the so as far as Rabbeinu Tam is concerned, okay, so what? In other words, they're not subject to the iser of hashchata zera because they're not included in the mitzvah peruvu. Good. That's the opinion of Rabbeinu Tam, and so therefore, when Rabbeinu Tam reads our Gemara, he reads our Gemara not as a physiological difference, but as a halachic difference. Yeah. Question? No. Okay, let's go. So the and Tosos goes on, continue on, please see further in Tosos. Anyway, really interesting sheet of Rabbeinu Tam, an interesting way to read our Gemara. Let's go back to our Gemara. Let's continue on our Gemara. So the Mishubach Tanoshim de Bnei Hargash and the Tikkat Seif. Ihachi, back to the Gemara. Ma'ir Marba Kilo Amar Benami. So the Gemara says, as far as the man is concerned, so every time he stimulates himself, so there's going to be an Isser. So the language of the Mishnah, it's not that good. Because the Mishnah says that a woman should check herself all the time. A man, not all the time. What do you mean, not all the time? How about never? Right? The Mishnah should say never. Right? The Mishnah should be writing in a much stronger language. So Kikitani Marba Anashim. So the Gemara says, okay, you're right. The Mishnah could have been written in a more clear language, but the way we're going to understand the Mishnah is that kol hamarbe, when the Mishnah says that whoever, for the woman, she should be doing it a lot, so that means, yes, the woman should be doing a lot. But that's not to be contrasted with the man, with the man should be doing it infrequently. No, the man should not be doing it infrequently, the man should be doing it never. It just, okay, just in terms of how the Mishnah is structured, the Mishnah's marbe is just simply going on the women. Tana with the Gemara quotes a brisa b'med varmim le'inyan shech v'zera, aval le'inyan zov, afu mishubach k'nashim. So the Gemara says, look, as far as the Mishnah is concerned, so that's as relates to shech v'zera, but when it comes to zov, so then it is going to be advantageous, it's going to be recommended that a man check with the same frequency as that of a woman. So as far as Zov is concerned, so let's take a look at an important Rashi over here, where Rashi is going to give us a basic distinction. We've gone over this numerous times, but let's go over Rashi again to go over the basic distinction between a Ziv discharge, a Zov discharge, versus a Shech Vazera discharge. Rashi writes, Linyan Ziva, Shiyatza Zov Mimena Verosa Livdoke De Limnos Ra Yosef Shtayim Latumos Vishal Shakarban. So first of all, let's get down the basic halacha. For if a man had a Zov discharge, now a Zov discharge is actually a different discharge than that of a typical Zera discharge. So first and foremost, in terms of what it creates tumah for the man. If the man has two or three, so he's going to be a major zov. For two, he's going to have to count seven clean days. For three discharges, three separate discharges, he's going to have to bring a karban. And Rashi goes on to point out, zov doma lemei batzik shel sa'orim uba min basar hamei. So first of all, the coloration of the zov discharge, it looks like water that was soaked together with barley. So it is of a darker coloration. Furthermore, says Rashi, it comes out of the man even while the man is not erect. Furthermore, says Rashi, Ushich vazera ba mi bisar hachai ukshur kaluvan beitza she'enu muzeres. And as far as Shech Vazera is concerned, so it only comes from a man who's erect. And Rashi goes on to say, and as far as its consistency is concerned, so it's like the white of an egg that is enu muzeres, that's not spoiled. So there is actual differences physiologically between the Zov discharge versus a Zera discharge. So for a man to make sure how many Zov discharges come out, because halachically it's significant, So for that, a man should do an examination. Now, as far as Zera is concerned, if a man does an examination with something that does not stimulate himself, so like, for example, with a rock or with a clay, so then bodeg, then he can do an examination. Vamat lislo, the Gemara says, what about a cloth? So presumably no, because that's going to stimulate himself. The Gemara says, v'atani, well, it's an abraisa. Bodeg atzma b'mat lislo v'chol davashe rosa. The Baraisa says that you can check yourself with a cloth. So Kedamar Abai b'malasava, Hachanami b'malasava. So Abai says no. But that cloth we're talking about is very thick cloth, and it doesn't stimulate. V'hechi edmar d'Abai adidnan. Abai's original answer was not going on that Baraisa, but rather was going on a different Baraisa. The Baraisa reads, Hayaocha b'truma v'hirgishin is dazev evarav. So a person is eating truma and he feels that he's about to have a discharge, and so what he wants to do is, once he has a discharge, he's going to be tamei. And the truma that he's going to be handling is going to become tameh. So he wants to complete eating the truma before it actually discharges. So what does he do? Ocheiz ba'masovo le'a es ha'truma. So he holds on to his private area and he consumes and he swallows the truma. Okay, now physiologically, is it possible to stop it from coming out? It sounds that way from the b'raisa. Anyway, point being is that he's holding on to himself. Now, holding on to oneself, the Gemara says, Rabbi Elazar says you can't do that. And in fact, if you do that, even for urination, the Gemara says, Kilo mevi mabula olam, you are bringing a flood onto the world. Rashi writes over here, what does that mean, bringing a flood onto the world? This takes us back to the Dor HaMabul. The Dor HaMabul, last week's Parsha. So this is the Aver that they had, in addition to other Averas that were highlighted. So the pasuk says ki shchis kol basar. Last week's parsha it says that they destroyed every person, and the Gemara in Rosh Hashanah, Rashi quotes it, beroschen kilkalu, meaning that with the literally the hot liquid, that's a reference to the zera that's coming out of their body. So that is what they did. They stimulated themselves. So you're not allowed to hold on to yourself even for urination purposes. So the Gemara says, I'm so confused. If you're not allowed to hold on to yourself even for urination purposes, so just to avoid the truma from becoming tamei, so you shouldn't be able to hold yourself. Amar Abai b'malisava. So this is where Abai gave the answer. Yeah, he's holding himself, but with a very thick cloth, so it does not stimulate himself. Rav Amar afilu tema b'malis raka kevin da akar akar. Now Rav gives a different answer. Rav says, no, over here in this particular situation, so you can hold yourself, but you could use a towel or a shmata that is softer. But look, he's already discharging. So once you're already discharging, so touching yourself is not going to create any further stimulation. To which the Gemara says, "Vabaye chayish dom asil asufe." Now Abaye says that's true, but by touching yourself, more may come out. And Rav is not concerned about this. The Gemara says, "What about the following brisa?" Halamaze domal lanosin etzba ba'ayin shekol zman she'etzba ba'ayin ayim edama'as v'chozeres umidama'as. The Gemara quotes the brisa. The brisa says, so what is this analogous to? Put your finger in your eye, and what's going to happen is your eye is going to start tearing. And the more you put your finger in the eye, the more that's going to come out. And so the Gemara says, as a mashal, that's the same thing with a person who stimulates himself. More is going to come out. V'rava. Now Rava's response to that is, kol achamume v'had achamume b'shaita lo shchiach. So Rava says, look, once a man has a discharge, so immediately afterwards, so there is not going to be an opportunity for more to come out. So for that period, immediately after the discharge, so Rava says, I'm not worried about that period in time. During the discharge, or sometime after the discharge, so then obviously those are times for concern, but immediately afterwards, so there is no concern, says Rava. And Abaye disagrees with that point. Okay, so where do we stand right now? For a man should not be doing an internal examination, and if he does an examination, he should be doing it with something that does not stimulate himself. And then the question of whether or not a shmata can be used, and the debate between Abaye and Rava. Gufa, the Gemara now is going to go back to the statement of Rav Elazar. Rav Elazar made an extraordinarily strong statement as it relates to a person who touches himself. Rav Elazar Amar Kol Ochez Ba'amos Amashin Kilo Mevi Mabul La'olam. Anyone who touches himself, even while urinating, is Mevi Mabul La'olam, is bringing a flood to the world. Amar Lo LeRabbi Eliezer. So here a dialogue in the Braisa between the Chachamim and Rabbi Eliezer. And the Chachamim say to Rabbi Eliezer, wait 1 second. V'alo Nitzosos Nitzin Al Raglav V'nir Kekur Shavcha. So let's say he does not hold himself during urination. What's going to end up happening is that drops of urine are going to fall on his legs and on his feet. He's going to walk past somebody. The other person is going to see the urine on his legs and on his feet. Aside from being disgusted, the other person is going to think to himself, wait 1 second. I don't understand. When he's urinating, isn't the urine going out of him, being forced out of him? And meanwhile, it's going on his legs and his feet. Oh, interesting. Oh, so it must be that he is incontinent. And on top of that, the Gemara is assuming, or the person's assuming, that together with the incontinence also comes a bit of impotence as well. And so when people think that, so now, if you go around and people think that you're impotent, so then they're going to obviously think, well, he's got children. Oh, I see. The children are not his. So there is that concern of what people think. And Rabbi Eliezer says, okay, I'm really happy that's what people think. But as far as I'm concerned, the isser of touching oneself is so severe that even if you run the risk of people talking that way about you and your children, I'd rather that, the people talking, rather than a person having to come into contact with himself. So Rabbi Eliezer says to the Chachamim, you know, what are you concerned about? The drips coming back on your legs? So Rabbi Eliezer says there's so many ways that one can resolve that issue. Number one, when you urinate, make sure to be on the higher incline. And so therefore, when you're urinating, none of the drops will come back and fall on your feet and your legs. Nobody will be talking. Or urinate onto soft earth where there's not going to be anything bouncing back. But don't make yourself a Rasha, not one moment in front of a Kadosh Baruch Hu. Okay, so we just saw two Brises back to back having dialogues between Rabbi Eliezer and the Chachamim. Now we know Rabbi Eliezer in both Brises took a very firm position regarding a person not touching himself, a man not touching himself, because the Elita Shechvazera. And Rabbi Eliezer has very strong language, Russia, and in terms of describing somebody, he's like the Dor HaMabul. Okay, so Rabbi Eliezer's position we know very clearly. In these two brisas, even though Rabbi Eliezer took a very severe position in both these brisas, however, the one brisa, Rabbi Eliezer just simply said no, firmly no, and I don't care what people say. In the second brisa, he gave advice in terms of methods of how to deal with it. How do you urinate and not come onto the situation of having to touch oneself? So his position is the same. However, in Bryson number two, he's giving solutions to the problem. In Bryson number one, no solutions. So this is now just a technical point of the Gemara. Of these two Brysas, which one came first? The one where he offered solutions or the first Brysa where no solutions? We know the answer. The answer is that he offered suggestions of what to do. I mean, I'm giving away the Gemara. But he offered suggestions of what to do. And then ultimately, when the Chachamim said back to him, but what if these solutions are not available? And then Rabbi Eliezer gives a shoulder shrug and says, okay, there are no solutions available, so then there's nothing to do. Sorry. Good. That's the sequence of the two Brises. The Gemara is just going to make this point clearly. Hi, Amar Luhu Bereisha. Which one was said first? Which Brisa was said first? Ilema Kamaisa Amar Luhu Bereisha. Basad Amar Luhu Isser. Rehad Amar Luhu Takanta. Now, in the first Brisa, he said Isser. And with no remedy. With no solutions. And then, in the second Brisa, he comes now up with solutions. So, Ela Ha Amar Luhu Bereisha. Va'amru Le Ein Lo Makum Gavo. Va'afritu Achuchmai. So, the sequence of the Brisas is first the second Brisa where he offered the suggestions on an incline, soft earth. And then the Chachamim keep pushing him. Okay, but what if those aren't available? And finally, the Rabbi Eliezer says, okay, I'm sorry. If there's no solutions, there's nothing else to do. Rather, nothing. If there's no solutions, then he cannot touch himself under any circumstance. Either drops are going to go back on his legs. People are going to be talking. Okay, people will talk. And we all know this, but now the Gemara is going to spell it out. What is the concern of Rabbi Eliezer? And it's not that the Chachamim aren't concerned about it as well. It's that the Chachamim feel that under certain circumstances, it would be okay, i.e. urinating. But still, everyone agrees to the basic idea. What is the idea? The idea is, Sheikh Vazer Levatala, one is not allowed to waste one seed. I'm Rav Yochan Kolamotzi, Sheikh Vazer Levatala, Chayv Misa. And so the Gemara is going to be making a foray of very strong statements regarding the level of Isser, the level the degree of violation that one violates when one wastes his seed. So, first statement authored by Rav Yochanan. a person who's Moshe Shichvat Zola Vatala is going to be subject to the death penalty. Death penalty, I think it's easy to say for me to say over here, Misa B'dei Shamayim. In other words, this is not a capital crime, but of akin to a capital crime, Kadosh Baruch Hu. Shenemar Vayere B'nei Hashem Asher Asa V'yamaz Gam Oso. And we go back to Aaron Onan, beginning of Parshas Vayeshev. Not the very beginning. Very beginning is Perek Lamed Zayin. This is Perek Lamed Ches. But anyway, we go to Parshas Vayeshev. And Aaron and Onan, the two oldest sons of Yehuda, so they engaged in Shechva Zer Levatala. They pulled out before completing the act of intimacy with Tamar. And for both of them, so they both died. By HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which, again, Misa B'dei Shamayim. It's not by Beis Din. And even though, it's interesting, the Torah spells it out by Onan, what he did. The Torah does not spell it out by error. We know the pasuk says gamo so, that they both engage in the same activity. On another occasion, you come to me afterwards. I have a suggestion in terms of why the Torah spells it out by Onan and not by error. So if you want to hear a interesting theory of mine, I have one for that, but on a later time. Anyway, Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Ami Amri ki ilu shofech damim shenemar. Rabbi Yitzchak and Rabbi Ami both say that it is akin to shvichas damim. It's like murder. In other words, of course, the zera has potential life, and in the fact that you are wasting the seed, so you are now destroying potential life. So it's ki'ilu. It's as if you were shofech damim. Shenemar anachamim ba'alim tachas ko eitz ranan shochtei hayiladim b'nachalim tachas sifei hasilaim. The pasuk in Yeshayahu describes a person who's under a tree, shochtei hayiladim, literally shechting the children, but with a little bit of a drush. The Gemara now is going to take the word shochtei, the shin, and substitute it out for a samach. Al tikrei shochtei, ela sochtei. What they're doing is they're squeezing, i.e. they're stimulating themselves, wasting their seed, and it's akin to shvichas damim. Ravasi amar kila oved avodas kochavim. We're going to hit all the big three. Right. The avodah zara. The Gemara says k'siv hacha tachas kol eitz ra'anan, k'siv hasam al arim aramim, v'tachas kol eitz ra'anan. So it's akin to, it's like idolatry. Rav Yehuda and Shmuel have a kami aigur de beikinisha de shafi yosef. Gemara tells an episode of Rav Yehuda and Shmuel. Rav Yehuda was a student of Shmuel. Remember, Rav Yehuda had two rebbeim. He had Rav and he had Shmuel. And so he is now learning with Shmuel, and they're in the shul. And the shul is shafi yosef of Naharda. Of course, they're Naharda because Shmuel was a Marda Asra of Naharda. And so the name of the shul, interesting name of the shul, Rashi just simply says it's the name Achus. It's the name of the... I'm sorry. It's the name of a place, says Rashi. But in any event, Amar le Rav Yehuda l'Shmuel tzarech ani lashdin. So Rav Yehuda says to his Rebbe, "Look, I'm really sorry right now. I know it's a personal request, but I have to go urinate." Amar le shin achuz b'amatech v'ashtein lachutz. So Shmuel says to his Talmud Rav Yehuda, "Okay. So what you'll do is you'll hold on to your ama and you'll urinate right over the side of the roof." Hechi avin achi v'atanya. Now, Rav Yehuda was taken aback by his Rebbe's suggestion that he actually hold himself. What do you mean? You're not allowed to. We learned to in the Brisa. Rebbe Elazar Amar Kol Ochiz Bamaso Umashin Kilo Mevi Mabul La'Olam. You're not allowed to. We just learned. Rebbe Elazar says it's Mabul. Stor HaMabul. It's that kind of Isser. Amar Abaye Asu Kibolasha. So Abaye says, no, under their circumstances, it was okay because it's like Boleshes. What is a Boleshes? Boleshes is a halachic category, did not. That's not what the word actually means. We'll see what the word means in just a moment. But it's a halachic category. We go back to the Mishnah in Avodah Zarah. Boleshes shenichnas leir b'shas shalom chavios p'suchos asuros v'stumos mutaros b'shas mochama elu ve'elu mutaros lefi she'en lam panai l'nasech. If you have a invading army coming through the town, and if it's a time of shalom, if it's a time of peace, meaning they're not invading, they're just simply marching through the town. And now the barrels of wine. Did the army, the soldiers of that particular army are not Jewish. And so the concern is that while passing through, there's an open barrel of wine. So aside from taking a little sip, right, aside from that, they're also going to do a little nisuch. They're going to put their hands in and they're going to do libations to their avodah zarah. So if the barrels are open, so you have to assume that's what they did, and therefore the barrel is going to be usher, even though you didn't actually see it happen. If the barrel is closed, so then the barrels are safe. However, it's shas mechama, but if it's a time of war, elu ve'elu mutaros. Open barrels and closed barrels are mutar. Why? Because while they are invading, so they're just simply, their head is not going to be right now on nisuch. Their head's going to be on the war that's at hand. And so therefore, ein lahem panai l'nasech. They don't simply have the time to do so. So amad kevin to be isi, so lo asil nisuch. Hachanami kevin to be isi, lo asi lehurure. So the Gemara says, look, if the if it's a time of stress and fear and so they're not going to be menasech, we're going to say the same thing over here. When Rav Yehuda is urinating off the roof of the yeshiva in the presence of Shmuel, so because of his fear, so therefore it's not going to lead to anything. Now v'hacha may be yisusa. Now over here, what's the fear exactly? The Gemara gives a number of suggestions. May be yisusa ika. So ibai sema be yisusa delele. So one suggestion is, well, it's nighttime. Id de igra, and they're on the roof. Okay, the two causes for concern. Ibai sema be yisusa de rabbi, and also his rabbi's right over there as well. And ibai sema be yisusa de shechina, and it could be that he happened to have an unusual level of Yerushamayim. Meaning we're all supposed to have Yerushamayim, fear of heaven. Rav Yehuda had extra levels of Yerushamayim. V'ibay sema, emasa demare aleha. Now another suggestion is that he had emase demare. Now I'm sorry. Let me go back to the emasa the I'm sorry. Biyususa deshchina. Biyususa deshchina means that he was around the base medrash. Okay. The other suggestion is what I said just moments earlier, and that is the emas demare. He had an unusual level of Yerushamayim. When Shmuel described his Talmud Rav Yehuda, he says, you know, he's not human. Now, obviously, he's speaking metaphorically. He's speaking just simply as hyperbole. But his point is that, you know, you and I have some Yerushamayim. That guy, meaning Shmuel referring to Rav Yehuda, he's got extra levels of Yerushamayim. So, Ibai Semen Nasui Hava, or the Gemara gives another suggestion, which is that he was married. Da'am Rav Nachman Imaya Nasui Mutar. For a married man, so a married man can hold himself while urinating. It's not going to lead to any kind of stimulation. So the Gemara gives another suggestion, and that is that you can navigate by holding onto your beitzim. The Gemara gives another suggestion. Or the Gemara gives an anatomical distinction in terms of where a person can hold himself in terms of not stimulating oneself. So if it is, oh, you're going to like my anatomy over here. Okay, I've been around you guys long enough. I think I get it. So if it's the atar is the corona, and if it is distal from the body, so then that would be okay. If it is proximal to the body, so then that would be stimulating and that would not be okay. So the Gemara gives a gvul, an actual border in terms of where he can hold himself so that it will not stimulate himself. Okay, so as we now are finished with the Amud Aleph, the Gemara here states very clearly that for a person to bring about Shechva Zer Levatala would be an Isser. The Gemara now has related it to all three of the Gimel Chamurs, the three major Yisurim in the Torah. It's Shvichas Damim, it's Avodah Zarah, it's Gilu Arayus, even though the Gemara has not spelled it out. Please don't worry, that's coming up as well. It's also going to fall into the category of Gilui Arayus. The Gemara refers to it as Dora Mabul. Right? Clearly, the Gemara is speaking in the strongest terms regarding this prohibition of Shechva Zer Levatala, obviously a very serious prohibition. The Gemara related an episode with Rabbi Yehuda and Shmuel on the rooftop, where Rabbi Yehuda needed to go. He asked his Rebbe, what do I do? Rebbe said, under these circumstances, it would be okay. And the Gemara gave a number of suggestions of why under those circumstances it would be okay. One more interesting point before we start with the Amud Beis of today's daf, and that is, you know, the Gemara in Shabbos describes Rabbi Yehuda Anasi as Rabbeinu HaKadosh. Right? He was the saintly Rabbi Yehuda. He was holy. He was a holy man. And the Gemara over there in Shabbos says, Shabbos daf kuf yud ches. Right, I'm looking at Tosos right now. I wish I had this kind of bekias. Anyway, Tosos in Shabbos and daf kuf yud ches says that Rabbeinu HaKadosh shalo iniach yado lamata me'avneto. So he never touched himself, and therefore he's referred to as Rabbeinu HaKadosh. So Tosos is bothered by a very simple question. What do you mean he's a holy man, he's a saintly man? That's true for everybody. So Tosos points out, no, the Kedusha of Rabbi Yehuda Anasi is such that he was a married man. And we just learned together that a married man is allowed to hold himself for urination. Because he's married, we're not worried that it's going to lead to Shechva Zer Levatala. Rabbeinu HaKadosh, even as a married man, still didn't come into contact with himself. That was the Kedusha, the extra level of piety of Rabbeinu HaKadosh. We are on the very top of the Amud Beis. Amar Rav, Amaksha Atzmo L'Das Yehei Benidui. A person who stimulates himself and leads to Kishui, So that person should be put into Cheirem. Tosas on the top of the Amud writes, it's not that he puts himself in Cheirem, but Ella Klamer Chayavim Lindosa. In other words, if found about by the Beis Din, so then the Beis Din is obligated to put such an individual in Cheirem. So Velema Asur to Gemagar Yetzahara Nafshei. The Gemara wants to know, why don't we simply say that it's Asur, because he is inciting the Yetzahara upon himself. Rabbi Ami Amar Nikra Avaryan. Rabbi Ami says that such an individual is referred to as an avaryan. Shekach nasoshal yetzahara. In other words, this is exactly the method, the procedure of the yetzahara. In that, the hayom omer lo aselecha asekach lomachar omer lo asekach lomachar meloch avod avodas kochavim veholech veoved. So it is a gateway iser. In that this particular Isser is going to be leading to another Isser, which is going to lead to another Isser, and ultimately he's going to go down to the path of Avodah Zarah, which can give more clarity on the Gemara on the previous Amud that gave it an analogy. It's like Ovid Avodah Zarah. It leads to Avodah Zarah. Igid Ami Amar Rabbi Ami Kol Amevi Asmali Dehira Ein Machnisin Asob Mechitza Soshal HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Anyone who leads himself to promiscuous thoughts, so he is not going to be put into the Mechitza of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The Gemara is just giving us a way to think about it, in that there is some mechitza, there's some confined area that a person is with a Kadosh Baruch Hu after 120 years. So a person who incites himself, who brings about promiscuous thoughts for himself, so he's not going to be within this area. Again, going back to Aaron Onan, so they were given the term vayera. Uksiv asim kelo yachafetz rasha ata lo yagurcha ra. And we have the pasuk in Tehillim that describes that when somebody's ra, he's not going to be in the same domain as the Kadosh Baruch Hu. Am Rabbi Lazar my dichtiv yedechem damim malu. Pasuk in Yeshayahu in the first perek, Chazon Yeshayahu says that yedechem damim malu, their hands are filled with blood. Elu hamen afim biyad. So these are people who are stimulating themselves with their own hands. Tanda be Rabbi Shmuel lo sin af lo se bach niyof bein biyad bein berega. Now the pasuk says, as one of the Aseres HaDibros, number 7 on the list is Lo Sinaf. Now, of course, it means not to commit adultery. Of course, that's what it means. The Gemara now on an extra level of drush. Now, this could be an asmachta, and it's certainly not the literal translation of the pasuk, but still, it's the correlation the Gemara is making with the Isser and this pasuk is that niyuf is not to be performed neither with one hand, one's feet. Meaning if a person were to stimulate himself and generate shechvat zera levatala, so such an individual also is violating lo sinaf. Not formally, but again, it's related. Tanu Rabbanan ha-gerim v'amasachim v'tinokas makvin es Mashiach. The Gemara makes an extraordinarily powerful statement that when it comes to gerim converts and misachim b'tinokos, and those who are, now I'm going to translate literally, but you'll see in just a moment, it's not the correct translation. Those who are fondling children, ma'akvin is the Mashiach, they're going to prevent the Mashiach from coming. Now, the Gemara says, let's see if we can understand this. Now, as far as converts are concerned, so they are preventing the Mashiach from coming. So as far as converts are concerned, they're difficult for the Jewish people, just like sapachas. Sapachas is one of the tzaras, one of the different forms of what in English we describe as leprosy, bad translation, but it's tzaras. Let's just leave it at tzaras. It's one of the forms of tzaras, so that's the convert. Now, the Gemara has made just a very strong statement against converts, and that it's caustic like tzaras, right. Let's just leave it at tzaras, right? So what exactly does the Gemara mean by that? So the Gemara doesn't explain it anymore, and obviously demands an explanation. What does that mean? So Rashi over here offers a lot of explanations, not just one. So Rashi says you could follow me in Rashi. I'm starting in the fourth line of Rashi from the top. Ein b'kiyum b'mitzvos m'viim peranios. So first and foremost, says Rashi, look, it's wonderful that they converted, but they don't know all the mitzvos. They didn't grow up with an education. And obviously they're learning on the fly, right? They're learning on the job. But still, they're simply not familiar with all the mitzvos. And so now that they're obligating all the mitzvos and they're not following all the mitzvos, so maybe peranios. It's going to lead to destruction, calamity. That's one possibility. Rashi offers another one. Rashi heard another pshat from one of his rebbeim, and that is that they're going to set a bad role model. In other words, they're not behaving in the way that a that a Jew should behave, and people are going to see them, and people are going to learn. V'yesh omer shekol Yisrael raven zebezer. Rashi offers a third pshat, which Rashi himself is not going to like, which is, Rashi says, you know, there's arevas, that we're responsible for each other. I see you doing an avera, so I have to ask you to stop doing the avera, because it's not just your avera. Your avera is my responsibility as well. Kol Yisrael raven zebezer. We're all responsible for one another. By the way, it works for the prevention of somebody else doing an avera. Also, it helps one as well. Meaning that if you need to do a mitzvah and you don't know how to make the bracha, I'll make the bracha for you. Kol Yisrael revim zebezeh. Good. So that's the basic idea. What Rashi's suggesting is, well, because we end up becoming responsible for the action because of our revus. And there's a really interesting Rashi, which again, on another occasion, if you want to ask me more about this Rashi, I do have more to say about this Rashi, but in the meantime, just introduce you to the basic idea of Rashi. V'lav milsehi. Rashi says, I reject that out of hand. Shalon it arvu b'shul agerim. Gerim are not included in the concept of arevus. Damirin b'meseches sota, nimsa l'chol echam yisrael sheish me'asal v'shol shalofim v'tuf kuf nun b'riso shekula nit arvu zebezeh amalo nit arvu al hagerim. As far as arvus is concerned, it is for the 603,550 that assembled at Mamad Har Sinai. Anyone who comes in afterwards, meaning all those who are biologically connected, meaning are children, so they're obviously included as well. But anyone who attaches themselves afterwards, so they're Jews for all intents and purposes, but not for Arevas. They're not included in Arevas. So Rashi categorically rejects the idea that there's Arevas for a convert. Now, if you take Rashi to his conclusion, you know what Rashi is saying. I mean, we know. We just learned what Rashi is saying. But you know what a consequence of what Rashi is saying is that if there's a convert there and he wants to make a bracha and he doesn't know how to make it and you want to make it for him, sounds like from Rashi you can't do that because they're not included in the concept of arevas. A really interesting Rashi, and you can ask me later for more on this Rashi. I do have more to say about this Rashi. In the meantime, however,
I'm surprised you didn't say that because converts may be more strict. And then
so Rashi doesn't say. Rashi doesn't say. Yeah. It's a good pshat. Not only is that a good pshat, Tosos in Kedushin offers such a pshat. Okay, but you know, I'm here in Nida, and we're learning the Rashis. If you want to see more in terms of more pshatim, so you can see Tosos over here. Tosos also the third Tosos on our Amud offers other pshatim, and you look at Tosos throughout Shas where this Gemara comes up. This is not the first time we heard this Gemara in Shas. The Gemara over here. Of Kashim Gerim, Lisokas Apachas, Yevamos, Kedushin, and you can see the Gemara's over there and the Rishonim over there for other Pshatim of our Gemara. In the meantime, so the Gemara says, fine. Meaning, let's go back to our Gemara, let's reset ourselves. The Gemara says that the Gerim and the Mesachke Betinokos are preventing Mashiach from coming. Now, you understand that language. The language basically means, like, it's not patently prohibited. But it results in there are bad consequences that come out of it. But we're not saying that it is patently wrong. And obviously, meaning as far as the gerim are concerned, like you hear that. Meaning obviously, a ger converts, that's wonderful. But in other words, there are consequences to it as well. And not all the consequences are good. Okay. And I know it's hard to say it over. It's hard to hear this. But the Gemara is being as realistic as one can imagine. And so. Now let's go to the Mesachke Tinokos, meaning that was the other thing that was listed over there. So the way I translated it, and it's not a correct translation, is the fondling of children. So the Gemara is saying, no, that can't be. Because we're talking about something which is not inherently prohibited, but it's not good. In other words, bad consequences come out as a result of it. So Ela Mesachke Tinokos, Mahi, Ilem HaMishkav Zachor. So if we're talking about where a man is molesting children, and the Gemara is assuming right now it's man to boy. And the Gemara is assuming right now that we're talking about Mishkav Zachor. So then, say what it is. That is, B'nai Skila Ninhu. That's a capital punishment with a capital crime. So we're not talking about preventing the Mashiach from coming. We wouldn't be using such light language. Ela B'derech B'nai Evarim. Oh, so maybe it's describing a person stimulating himself. And the Gemara says, B'nai Mabul Ninhu. Again, we would be using much stronger language. The language we would be using is B'nai Mabul. So, Ela D'Nesiv Ketanos, D'La B'nos Oli D'Ninu. So the Gemara says, okay, so what the Brisa is making reference to over here, so, and this obviously is not the literal translation, but in the context, this is the correct translation, And that is the man marries a girl that's so young that she can't even produce children. And so therefore, for the first years of their marriage, while she's at such a young age, so they're having relations, but it's not resulting in peruvu. I'm Rav Yossi, Ein Men David Ba'al She'Chala Kol Neshama She'Beguf. And the Gemara over here now is going to blend it together, Agadata and Halacha, meaning, and what is the purpose of marriage peruvu that we know? And the Gemara says, and it's more than that. That you know when Mashiach is coming? Mashiach is coming when we take all the neshamas and remove it from guf. Now this is interesting. Guf over here, I know it's going to sound like I'm speaking Kabbalah. I'm saying over a Gemara. Guf over here is an area up in Shemayim where all the neshamas are kept. It's a bit ironic that the area that the neshamas are kept is in a place called guf, which we translate as a physical body. But that's the name of the area. Everything I'm saying, by the way, is coming via Rashi. You could see Rashi for the way I'm saying over the Gemara. So that means to say that when we exhaust all the neshamas out of this area called guf, so that's when Mashiach comes. So when a man's marrying a girl who's incapable of producing children, so then you're now we understand you're preventing Mashiach from coming. And the Gemara in Yeshayahu supports this idea that the Mashiach comes when all the neshamas are going to be exhausted, are going to be taken out of this area. So in other words, okay, peruvu. So a man marries a girl who he can't fulfill peruvu with. So then that's, again, let's be careful about the way we say it. It's not, to use the word bad is imprecise. It's marriage. In other words, a husband and wife, they're married. But in the fact that for the first years of their marriage, they're not going to be producing children, so it's preventing Mashiach from coming. You could say that, but in other words, but that we're not going to say, meaning because, again, it's not a bad thing. It's just that for the later years of the marriage, so that's still a mitzvah. In other words, they fulfill the mitzvah peruvu, and their husband and wife and they're married, and there's a mitzvah of ona. So that's fine, and that's good. But when a man has an opportunity to marry somebody either that can have children or he knows she's so young she can't have children, so then obviously if the purpose of marriage is peruvu, so then obviously the correct decision would be to marry somebody who can have children.
How does this hold up against birth control then?
Birth control is a very big question, and not for now and not me. That's something you discuss with your local rabbi. So, ba'anashim tikat seitz. The Gemara regarding it's a wonderful question. It's just, you know, and I am sidestepping it, but given that the objective over here is the daf, so you know, I get to stay on daf. It's one of my advantages. So anashim tikatzeitz. So now we're going to go back to the Mishnah, and now we want to say pshat at the end of the Mishnah. When a man does an internal examination, so that means he has to touch himself, and at the end of this daf, one realizes that he can't do that, and the Mishnah spoken language that's really strong. Cut off the hand. Now, what does that mean, cut off the hand? So, ibailu dina tanan latusa tanan. So, the Gemara gives two ways to understand the Mishnah. The Mishnah could be understood literally, that's the correct halacha, or latusa, or the Mishnah could be just simply saying that the person is going to be cursed. Now, dina tanan, now the Gemara says one possibility is that the Mishnah is speaking aliva da halacha. That's correct. Ad Rav Huna katz yada. Rav Huna cuts somebody's hand off. Now, this sounds strange, I know. Rashi quotes the Gemara in Sanhedrin. Gemara in Sanhedrin says that when a Jew raises his hand against another, so he's a Rasha, right? Remember Moshe and the two Jews? Nice. Right? Rasha lama takarev reyecha. So, and Rav Huna over there actually cut off the person's hand. Now, this doesn't sound like our religion. It sounds like another religion. But nevertheless... I feel like if we knew more about the circumstances and the context of that particular situation, it would sound a little bit more reasonable to us, right? Generally speaking, right, we're reasonable people, and we understand generally how law is to be adjudicated, and so it does sound a little bit unusual, admittedly so. But still, what the Gemara is suggesting is that's one way to read our Mishnah. Or latusa tanan, or maybe it's just a curse. Tashma detani Rabbi Tarfon Alma Yadla Amati Katseitz Yadol Tiburom. So Rabbi Tarfon in the Brisa says that when a person touches himself, so you should cut off his hand and right where the hand is, meaning right on his stomach. Amru lo, skipping the parentheses. Valo kreso nifkas. What do you mean? Chop his hand off over there, right against the stomach. Isn't the stomach going to open up? Amle mutav tivake kreisa vayir leber shachas. So Rabbi Tarfon says, okay, yeah, I get it. But in other words, but better that than the ultimate consequence of meeting Kadosh Baruch Hu after 120 years and having been engaged in this kind of behavior. So Iyamar Pishlam Medina Tanan Hainu Damir Valo Kreisa Nifkas. Now, if we're talking literally, so then you understand. The Chacham's response to Rabbi Tarfon, right there, opposite his stomach. So Ela Iyamar Latusa Tanan My Kreisa Nifkas. But if it's a curse, so then I don't understand. What does the stomach have to do with anything? In other words, we're just cursing the person. Elamai Dina Tanan. So Lo Sagi Delav Al Tiburo. So the Gemara says, oh, okay, but you know what? I'm still not with you. Because even if you understood it literally, that this is the halacha, you cut off his hand. So what you could do is you could just simply move his hand away and you could cut off his hand. You don't have to do it opposite the stomach. Ela Hachi Kamar. This is the dialogue and this is the correct way to understand the dialogue. Rabbi Ta'amar, Rabbi Hachi Kamar, Rabbi Tarfon, Kolam Machin, Sayad Lamatim, Tiburo, Tikat Seitz. That when you put your hand below your stomach, meaning you're touching yourself, so then it should be cut off. Amr lo le Rabbi Tarfon Yosheva lo kotz bekreso lo yidlenu. So the Gemara says, really? So that means that any time that a person has a, let's say he has a splinter, right in his private area, and he needs to remove the splinter, you want to tell me that he shouldn't do that? So Amr lehen lo, lo. And so Rabbi Tarfon's response is, yeah, that's right. That's what I'm saying. Valo kreso nifkas. Okay, and you leave the splinter there, and it's going to get infected, and it's really going to end up being bad. And Rabbi Tarfon took a very strong position. And he said, okay, I understand that, but touching oneself is such a serious isser that even though he's risking injury, serious injury, still he shouldn't do it. In other words, I'll suggest get somebody else to do it, but he himself shouldn't do it, not the risk of violating this isser. Okay, obviously, we're going to go a little bit further this morning, but that concludes our first sugya of the second parak of the Masechta. Very sensitive topic, a very delicate topic, a very mature topic. But to summarize, a man is not allowed to stimulate himself, and the degree of Isser and the consequence of the Isser was discussed in the first half of, not the first half, the majority of today's daf. Let's do a little bit more. Chereshes Vashota. Now, let's say you have a woman who is not mentally competent, and she's a kohenis, or she's an ashes kohen, or a bas kohen, and she wants to eat truma. So what does she do? So she can't do an internal examination. She doesn't have the mental competency to do so. So the Mishnah says, fine. So you'll get another woman, right, a friend, a relative, to do the bedika, and now that she is nivdak, she's been examined, so then she can eat truma. Now the Gemara says, wait one second. Of the women that were mentioned in the Mishnah who lack mental competency, the Gemara says, wait one second. Chereshes, itaduk lanasha. So she's a cheresh. And I know I didn't translate anything in the Mishnah, but the Gemara is going to translate everything. So as we go through the Gemara, we will learn all these cases of the Mishnah. So the cheresh, the Gemara says, cheresh is a woman who can't hear. Okay, so she's deaf. That's not a lack of mental competency. So there was a deaf woman living in Rebbe's community, and Rebbe said she was excellent. She did a bedika for himself, and she was so skilled and knowledgeable that other women who did bedikas brought their bedika cloths to her, and she advised the other women as well. And she was deaf, but so what? That's not a lack of mental competency. So Hasam b'Mendaber is Venus Shamas. So over there, the Gemara says, Cheresh in that context does not mean that she was deaf. Cheresh meant that she was mute. But the point is, in other words, it's the same point. Meaning, a lack of competency is assumed with a woman who can't hear and can't speak. And back in the day, a woman who, or any person, who lacked the ability to speak and hear, lacked mental competency. They just simply couldn't have been taught. I understand things have changed over the years. But back in the day, that was the assumption. But Hacha, and the woman over there in Rebbe's community, so she was mute. But she can hear, and she was knowledgeable. But Hacha, B'Sheinah Medaber, Zvena Shamas. But over here, we're talking about somebody who can't speak and can't hear. The Mishnah tells us, it's the Mishnah Chagiga, it's also in Trumos, that a person who cannot hear, whenever we say the word Cheresh, it means somebody who cannot hear and cannot speak. And that person is assumed to lack mental competency. The blind woman. So a blind woman can't do a bedika, she can't do an internal examination. The only thing she can't do is she can't see her internal examination. But rather than go through the uncomfortable procedure of somebody else having to do an internal examination upon her, let her do an internal examination upon herself and then show it to her friend. I'm Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina, Suma in a Mishnah. So Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Chanina says, that is, you're correct. There's no answer to your question. Rather, editing. We're going to take the Summa of our Mishnah and remove it from the Mishnah. It doesn't belong in the Mishnah. Nitrifa daita haina shota. Now, the nitrifa daita is a woman who's insane. But the Mishnah already mentioned that when the Mishnah said the shota. She nitrifa daita machmas choli. So the Gemara says that she was nitrifa daita as a result of illness. Did nan. I'm sorry. Tana Rabbanan. The Gemara quotes Abraham Kohen shota. Matbilna so machilna so. Truma la'erev u'mishamim oso shelo yishan. When it comes to a Kohen shota, so what we do with our deranged shota is we put him in the mikvah and we feed him truma, and then, and we do so up until the evening, and then in the evening we make sure that he doesn't fall asleep. Once he falls asleep, yashen, tameh. Lo yishan, tahor. So as long as he is not falling asleep, so we can assume that he's in a state of tahara. Once he falls asleep, so then he no longer is assumed to be in a state of tahara. Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Tzedek, Omer, Osan, Lo, Kishal, Or, and according to Rabbi Elazar ben Yaakov, so what we could do is that we can make for him some sort of, it's kind of like a jockstrap, made up of leather, it's a leather pouch, and that way we can ascertain as to whether or not he was a Balkari or not a Balkari over the course of the evening. Amr Lo, Koshekin, Shemevi, Lidei, Chimam. What do you mean? That's going to stimulate him. Amr Lehem, Ledevrechem, Shota, En, Lo, Takana. Well, what are you suggesting? Right? According to you, he has no remedy. Amr Lo, Ledevarein, Yashin, Tamil, Lo, Yashin, Tahor. So what do you mean? That's not true. According to us, until he sleeps, he's fine. So Lidvarecha Shamir Tipa Kachadav Tivla Bekis. But according to you, look, what's going to happen is that you're going to give him a pouch, and what's going to happen is that he may have a small discharge, and it's going to be absorbed in the pouch. We just don't like the way you are trying to remedy the situation and make him tar for a longer period of time. Meaning, at least according to us, he'll tell them the mikvah, and until tonight, he'll be able to eat truma. So it's not. It's not that he has no solution. Admittedly, our solution is limited, but our solution is better than yours in terms of trying to give him some sort of pouch.
Is eating truma a mitzvah?
Why are we so... It's such a wonderful question. I don't know the answer. Like, why are we so bent on the idea that this shota has to eat truma? Right. I'm unclear about that. And
no, maybe his daughter... daughter, of course, she has to eat something.
Okay, right, but it doesn't. It could be something else other than truma.
No?
Okay, and it's... But you're right. And in general, eating truma is a mitzvah. But in this context, I'm still with you. In other words, it's like there is other food out there other than truma.